Well, hi. How are you? Good. Good to see you. It's good to see all the new faces. Welcome to everybody from wherever you came from. So it's good to have a packed house here. A lot of young faces out there. It's very good to see. This morning, I'm going to take just a slight break from the war and watching the news on the war and all the things that are going on with that. And I want to cover a topic today that is very relevant for all of us to understand. I think we're going to have the lights down as far as, because we've got a bit of slides going on here as well. I want to cover a topic today that is super relevant. And I'd like to show that the origination of this topic and where it came from. Today, basically, what I want to talk to you about is lipstick on a pig. Now, there's a saying that says you can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. It's still a fat, smelly pig. The lipstick doesn't do anything. It doesn't make you want to kiss it or anything like that. So what I want to talk about is lipstick on a pig. Now, what in the world am I talking about? There's a way of life that has been offered up to this world. And I want to show you that the way that Satan offered up to mankind and the way that of life that mankind now lives has been packaged up into something like lipstick on a pig. You can dress it up however you want. You can present it however you want, but it's still a smelly, rotten pig underneath. So today I'm going to step through and go through lipstick on a pig today. So if you would, turn to Genesis 2, verse 16 to start with. Genesis 2, verse 16, and what we find is the origin or the start of this way of life that was offered out to people. And who started it? Now it says, and the Lord commanded the man, saying, this is talking about the origination with Adam and Eve, of every tree of the garden you may freely eat. Because God had put two trees there. He said, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat. From the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die. Now you'll notice something here. First off, God planted every other single tree and said, look, freely eat of those trees. There's one tree that I want you to stay away from. Notice how God phrased it. He phrased it very positively. I give you everything else here to completely eat, but there's one tree that I want you to stay away from. And if we continue on in Genesis, it says now in verse chapter 3, verse 1, it says, now the serpent was more cunning than any beast of the field, which the Lord had made. And he said to the woman, has God indeed said, you shall not eat of every tree of the garden? Now, you'll notice right away that he phrased it in a very negative sense. In other words, he said, you know, you are missing out on something. God is actually holding something back from you. You know, he phrased it very negatively, where God put it very positively that you can eat of all of these things. And the woman initially had the right response, didn't she? She said to the serpent, we may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat it, nor shall you touch it, lest you die. So very simple statement that God told them and said to them. Now, what would the serpent say back to them? He made an appeal to Eve, and he said, the serpent said to the woman, you shall not surely die. Now, this statement encompasses a lot of concepts. One is, yeah, it was talking about you shall not, you know, physically die, but it's also saying, look, you can eat this and get away with it. There are no consequences. So there are no consequences to what this action is going to be is a very common theme that you hear wrapped around this way. There are no consequences. You won't die. You won't die now. You won't die slowly. You won't die tomorrow. And we'll find out what the reality of that. It says, for God knows that in the day that you eat of it, your eyes will be opened. You will be like God, knowing good from evil. And so as we go on there in verse 6, it says, so when the woman saw that the tree was, and you'll notice there's very specific things that are called out here. The tree was basically three things, good for food, that it was pleasant to the eyes, and the tree was desirable to make one wise. She took of its fruit and ate. She also gave to her husband with her, and they ate, and then all of a sudden, their eyes were open, and they understood that they were naked. Now, what's important to understand about this whole exchange here is that the appeal of this way of life was presented right from the very get-go, and the appeal of this way of life happens basically on four different levels. There's four different levels of this appeal. First is there's an intellectual appeal that is made. And you hear this done by Satan where he says things like, you know, you're not going to die. He starts these intellectual arguments or intellectual things that just are not true. You shall not surely die. In fact, you won't die, but you're going to become very sophisticated. You're going to become very strong. You're going to become like a god yourself if you eat of this way of life, is what he is saying to them. So intellectually, he said something to Eve. Now, you'll notice, though, it's not just an intellectual argument. A lot of times we stop, we think we're just arguing, we think we're just working on an intellectual level. But notice, this tree actually pulls on us in another way. It's going to make its pull and appeal to us on an emotional or physical or to our senses as well. It's not just a head game, a head argument that we're dealing with here. This way of life actually poses and presents a very strong pull on our senses and our bodies. Why is that? Because it said here it was good for food. She saw it and started looking at that and said, wow, man, the more I look at this thing, the more I can see that if I just took a bite, it would taste so good. It was also pleasant to the eyes. You know, it was probably shaped a certain way and a very nice looking fruit. It's kind of a pleasant type of a thing. And guess what? It was desirable to make her wise. So all of a sudden, these things are now pulling on her at a different level that's not just in the head or a head game. It's not just a knowledge game. All of a sudden, these things start pulling on her flesh and appealing to her that way. So let's look at this. Turn over, if you would, to 1 John 2, verse 16, because there's, in the New Testament, equivalent scripture that explains this way of life in the exact same terms. So there's those three phrases in Genesis, you know, that good for the food, pleasant to the eyes, and desirable to make one wise. Those are repeated again in the Bible time and time again. And it's not a coincidence that they're named exactly like they are in Genesis, just kind of phrased in a little bit different words. Turn to 1 John 2, verse 16. And let's read that. It says, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life." There's three things that are called out. Guess what? Exact matches for those things that are in Genesis. In fact, if you have in your Bible and you want to link those two, just draw next to the Genesis scripture, put 1 John 2:16 next to that. These three things are not of the Father, but they're of the world, and the world is passing away, and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever. Now, I won't go into this now, but if you just want to jot it down, there's also another exact match for these three things found in Jude 4, verse 11. Where it cites an example of each one of these things. And I don't have time to step through that today, but just jot that down. But you'll see that the New Testament reiterates the exact same thing as the Old Testament. Now, let's take a look at this tree. Okay, so first off on this tree, we'll notice a couple of things. The first thing that was put out was that this tree... let me back up on there. This tree, number one, the New Testament calls the lust of the flesh. That's equivalent to the phrase good for food. In other words, it appealed to her kind of on a senses level, or you know, with her senses. It looked good for food. The New Testament says that's a lust, a pull. It lusts against the flesh. And the example that we find in Jude that we won't go through is Cain. Now, why is Cain an example there? Because I think a lot of times we think a lust of the flesh, you know, an obvious one obviously is something like a sexual drive or a sexual addiction. But Cain, what was the lust or the pull on his flesh? This is an interesting example because it was about anger. It was about something that just pulled on him that he could not control, this bitter anger, and that dominated him. So we find the first example is actually a good match and one that actually helps us expand our thinking or understanding about what this lust of the flesh or this pull is. Now, what about the phrase lust of the eyes? That's equivalent to the one that's in Genesis that says, you know, it's pleasant to the eyes. In other words, it started to get appealing to the eyesight and to what she wanted. And we'll see the example in Jude was... Balaam. Balaam had a lust for money. This money caused him to do some really funny things. It caused him to want to go out and curse Israel, and you see how God kind of foiled that with the donkey that spoke to him. But again, that's the example there. The lust of the eyes is appeal for money. And then the pride of life. That's equivalent to the phrase, desirable to make one wise. You'll notice these are exact, talking about the exact same thing. And the example that's given is Korah. What did Korah? Korah thought, you know, I can do this much better than Moses. I have more skills. I have more talents. I have more abilities. I should be in that position where he is. And you'll notice exactly what kind of happened in that example. Now, let me ask you a question about these three things, the lust of the eyes and the pride of life. Is this something that is just for Bible times? Do you encounter these things today or not? You know, it's just a question to kind of ask and answer to yourself. You know, do I encounter these things in my day-to-day life? Do I see these things pulling on me? I think that we'll find that there's actually nothing new under the sun. I know I've heard it said, and I probably have said a bunch of times, well, you know what? It's a different generation, right? You know, it's I'm not like my father and my mother, and things are different now. But you know what? The more I look into these things, the more I read about this, I find that there's absolutely nothing new under the sun. This started from the beginning. This is what happened down through man's history. Satan tempted Christ this way, and then we find it happening today. Why do we find it happening today? Is that a true statement? Is this something that you encounter today? Let's see. Let me hypothesize and see if we can answer that question. Let's just take a look of an example today. One example is pretty much pick any rap video, right? And what I like to do is I've taken a snapshot of a rap video. I've muted the sound on purpose, and I also had to edit it down. Most of the rap videos I edited ended up to be about 4 or 5 seconds when I edited them, so it took me a while to actually find a video that had some little bit of length to it. But when you watch this clip of this video, think in your mind, am I seeing lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, and pride of life throughout this? And just see if you can spot these things. This is a video by a guy named Half Dollar, no wait, Two Quarters? No, 50 Cent. Now you notice what's happening. First off, I had to cut out a lot of parts, but there's this girl, and she's not actually wearing much, sitting next to him. You see his, you know, $15,000 watch there. You see his $60,000 or $70,000 Hummer. And you'll also notice, you know, pride of life. He's pulling up to this guy who's car breaks down, and you just kind of see this kind of look on his face that he's given him. It's just kind of a smirk, like, you know, huh, don't you wish you were in my place? Don't you wish that you were driving in my Hummer with my girl? And you'll notice that if you look at this is pretty much the theme of what? This is the theme of pretty much most every music video, the theme of most every movie or coming-of-age teenage movie has to do with these things, has to do with sex, has to do with money, and it has to do with the pride of life or your position, where you are in relation to those around you. It has to do with those three things. And if you see this theme is not new. This is not a new concept today, but this has been rehashed time and time again. And why has it been rehashed down through the ages? Because it traps people and it works. That's why this way works. This method of offering out to people actually works. Let's kind of break down and look at each one of those areas. The first one is the lust of the flesh. Now, these are different things. You know, these are the passions of the flesh. Obviously, we know about sex, but you also include things in there like anger, things that kind of dominate you and master you, food addictions. Now, there's a common phrase that's been said forever, you know, if it feels good, do it. And the idea there is that the senses are right. They rule. If the senses say to do it, then I'm going to do it. You know, what are some of the other pulls of the way this pulls on us? You know, the pressure to have the perfect body. You know, can you not read the news without hearing something about Botox? You know, or plastic surgery or things like that. What about the concept of binge drinking? Right? You know, I'm done. I'm just going to go out and party. You know, what about things like ecstasy and clubbing? Is that not just a satiation of the senses? Is that not just ultimately filling that? You know, the concepts of, you know, hooking up. That's very prevalent. And there's other concepts that you know and that you've heard as well around this. Now, that's what it offers out. And you'll see it phrased and presented and just packaged up in different ways that are relevant to today. But what's the reality of the situation? You know, the reality of these types of things really is that it only ends up in a lot of addictions to drugs, cigarettes, TV, addiction to attention, addiction to sex. You know, I think probably everybody in this room could name somebody they know that's addicted to pornography on the internet. And how does that trap? How does that hold somebody down? I bet you can think that that person, you know, is addicted to pornography, can't be in the room with a girl without losing their brains, can't function normally when it comes to things of sex and things like that. That thing has just got a grip and a hold on the person. It ends up in diseases and divorce. It ends up in suicide because when you get down so low and these things no longer fulfill the senses, there's really nowhere left to turn. So the reality is not what is presented. The reality of the situation is not what it portends to be. Now, when you hear these type of things, you're going to hear it probably phrased in a number of different ways, right? You'll encounter a number of different ways, and one of those ways may look something like this. Now, these are not professional actors. I think they did a great job, but we did not pay these people to do this. That's one way you could hear it. You know, I'm done. Or, hey, the sun came up today. Let's go drink. Kind of any reason to actually get out and drink. You may hear it put another way, right? The pressure to be, you know, huge muscular for guys or a perfect body for girls. You may hear it put another way. Please, go work out and come back in a year. I was standing behind the camera when she said it, so. I'm still recovering. Let's take a look at the second aspect of this tree, the lust of the eyes. You know, what is this all about? This is about a number of things. This is the desire to have things that you don't have, right? The things that are kind of maybe out of your reach. And what does that cause people to do? They're on this never-ending cycle of overspending. You know, and in debt. I know people who have $50,000 worth of bills because they need the latest clothes. Okay? Very interesting concept. Things I don't quite have or don't have the reach, you know, for. Or I have to have the best type of clothes. Or, you know, what's also very common is having the best car. Or, you know, money makes people do some very interesting things. It makes people work, sacrifice pretty much their entire lives or their souls for that money. There's a lot of things that this pull does for you or does on you. And there's also a competition that happens in this space. When you have something, guess what? Your neighbor just one-upped you, and you kind of have to have more. I see this all over the place. This is not just as an adult when you're working. This happens on all different levels. This happens even with kids sometimes, I see, right, when this comes out. But what's the reality of this pull? The reality is a number of things, right? There's always going to be something more there. Trust me, when you get something, give it 2 or 3 years, and that thing's going to start to get old and break down, and somebody comes along with something new. It doesn't stop. It doesn't end. It's kind of like a gerbil in a wheel. You know, you used to have those things where they just kind of run around in a circle. The reality of that is that that can concept can trap you and just keep you, you know, in kind of a slavery to this pull or this desire, and you don't have any kind of control of yourself. Now, this can manifest itself in a number of different ways, and this may be one of the ways that you may hear it. Why do you work at Home Depot? You know, I can go out and gamble and make 10 times what you made in that one day. Right? The quick buck. You'll hear this, you know, done a lot of different ways. There's just this desire and this pull to make more and more money. Let's go on to the third one. You know, what about the pride of life? What does this concept offer up to you? It offers up a number of things. You know, this talks about your status and your position in life. Right? Where you are. And this has a lot to do with your power over other people. The way of this world is a way of power. It's a way of saying that I have something up on you. There's never an equality. You always have to be kind of jockeying for a position. This takes place on every single level that you're in school, in work. It just doesn't stop. I've seen people who run a desk that have maybe 2 people that work with them, and they have to assert their power in this small group of 3 people. It just doesn't stop because your pride, your position in life, it's very, very important. Now, what you'll also notice is if you get the first 2 a lot of times, get the girl and get the money, all of a sudden you also have the status, don't you? That's what you see a lot in the, you know, different rap videos or things that are portrayed there. This also manifests itself in a number of different ways, right? It's an acceptance concept. You know, becoming in the beautiful crowd or the smart crowd or the, you know, athletic crowd or whatever crowd, the desire to give into this makes you do abnormal or funny things, right? Or, you know, I just want people to like me. I just want to be part of either one of those groups. But what's the reality of this? And I've seen this written time and time again, that even when you have power in the position, that does not give a confidence. It doesn't give a real confidence. In fact, it's never ending. There's never enough power, and there's never enough jockeying that you can go through in a position. And it doesn't satisfy these people. There always has to be a bigger power and a bigger position that to be in. Let's hear how.
Who are you to tell me what to do? I play for the UW football.
you know, I belong to some group that, you know, you couldn't be a part of. You know, who are you talking to me? You can hear that presented a lot of different ways, but even on a football team, there's a status or a position that's there. Now, what's the point of all this? There's a very important point to understand about this, because what made Eve cave in? What about that exchange made Eve cave in? First off, Satan presented an intellectual argument to her, and guess what? Her response was correct. She said, God said we may not eat of the trees except this one. What hooked her, what got her, was not the intellectual head game. It's important to understand. What hooked Eve is because it said she saw that it was good for the food, pleasant to the eyes, and desirable to make one wise. This pull on her was too great. That is the part of this tree that hooked her and has hooked mankind ever since the beginning. Yes, those arguments are thrown in there to get you thinking, but I have seen it time and time again. How many people do you know that they may have had a lot of biblical knowledge, but something else took them away? Some desire for money, some desire for sex or sexual addictions, or just something in life pulled that person away. I can guarantee you it's 99% of the time it's never this intellectual argument, is it? Why is that important? Because I think we understand that everybody here in this room has grown up in the church, may have a lot of head knowledge in their head, may have understand God and understand His Bible and His Word, but the thing that trips people up is the other pull, the pull on the senses. And the reason I bring this up is so that we can start to be aware that when you start to encounter and hear these three things presented to you time and time again, you can understand that's what trips most people up in life. It's not the intellectual knowledge or the argument. Very important to understand. Now, why do I call this lipstick on a pig? For a number of reasons. Because like the lipstick on a pig, it's just a pure lie. Right? The concept of you shall not surely die or have no consequences was not true. They died. And they had consequences, severe consequences. Their children, one of them ended up killing the other. There's a lot of things that were ramifications of this way. It's also lipstick on a pig because it's a very thin, appealing cover on the way of death. It's a lipstick put on a pig. That's about how thin it is. And it covers up what really lies underneath, which is death. Not only that, but in this life, there's misery and suffering. Misery and suffering. And also, it presents out really a way of seduction and addiction. This way of life is a way of seduction and addiction because you always need more and more. You're never pretty enough. You're never smart enough. And you're never good enough. You always crave more and more. And you know what? It's not going to give it to you. When I say it's a way of addiction, it grabs and gets a hold of people and does not let them go. Now, take an example, an ultimate example. Well, who has power? Who has, you know, money? Who has sex and all that? Hollywood marriages. Can you hardly name one Hollywood marriage that is together for more than a few years? If that is a pit, that's the ultimate example of living this way of life. And you see it is such a sham. It is such a sham. That's an example today. That's one of the best examples that we have. Now, let's turn over to Proverbs 7, verse 6. And let's understand just a little bit more about this way of seduction. Proverbs 7, verse 6. Because this, a lot of times we read these scriptures and we think, oh, this is just talking about somebody getting seduced by a prostitute or a harlot. But when we look at the language and the lingo here, we find that this proverb is actually describing this way of life. The same characteristics and the same result are here. So let's understand that. Proverbs 7, verse 6. But the window of my house, I looked through my lattice, and I saw among the simple, I perceived among the youths, a young man devoid of understanding, passing along the street near her corner, and he took the path to her house. I've kind of highlighted some key phrases just to think about. In the twilight, in the evening, in the black, in the dark of night. And there, a woman met him with an attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times, she was outside, at times in the open square, lurking at every corner. So she caught him and kissed him, and with impudent face she said, I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you, diligently to seek your face, and I have found you. I have spread my bed with tapestry, Right? These are kind of riches and things there, with Egyptian linen, some of the finest linen. I perfume my bed with myrrh and aloes and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love. Do you notice the same appeals here? Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pride of life. There's some flattery going on here. Let us delight ourselves with love. Now, for my husband's not at home. He's gone on a long journey. He's taken a bag of money with him, and he will come home at the appointed day. In other words, we can get away with this. You shall not surely die from this. There is no consequence. My husband's gone. The same verbiage is in this, this Proverbs. With her enticing speech, she caused him to yield, and with her flattering lips, she seduced him. Immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter or as a fool to the correction stocks. Till an arrow struck his liver, and as a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know that it would cost his life. The conclusion of the matter is, now therefore, listen to me, my children. Pay attention to the words of my mouth. Do not let your heart turn aside to her ways. Do not stray to her paths, for she has cast down many wounded. And all who were slain by her were strong men. This is not for just the weak. Strong people get slain by this way of life. Her house is the way to hell, descending to the chambers of death. Now, if we kind of summarize what we just read there, we find that this is describing or talking of Satan's way of life. First off, we see the description. It's a spirit of adultery. It's clear, crafty, loud, and rebellious. In other words, nobody's going to tell me what to do. I'm just kind of going to do my own thing all the time. Something that's very interesting is it's also lurking at every corner. Can you not turn on the TV today without getting a glimpse of something? Can you not change the channel, read the paper, look at a news magazine? This is lurking at every single corner that you visit. This way of life is just reaching out to grab and make its appeal to you. How does it operate then? One of the things that's important is this is diligently seeking you out. You can't hide from this. It's going to find you and seek you and single you out and make a flattery and appeal to you. It's going to appeal to you with sex, money, and flattery. You won't get caught, and there are no consequences. These are the concepts that are wrapped up in this way. And again, why did this person in this proverb cave in? Because it started in his heart, and we start to see an answer to this problem right here. Started in the heart. The heart started to ponder and think and turn to the ways that are presented out here. Plus, he strayed into her path. That statement is not an accidental statement. Oh, I was just happened to accidentally wander there. It's kind of like subconsciously, I really know what I'm doing, and I'm just going to get as close as I can. I think I can get pretty close without getting burnt. That's what it means. It kind of strayed into the path and gave in to then these appeals. It's the same story again and again. What's the result? It says here two things. Wounded. That is important because that has to do with this life. There are consequences to going this way of life. It's not scot-free, and there are repercussions that happen here. It's wounded, and it wounds people severely, and then in the end, it ends up in death, and even in the short term, it ends up in death. Proverbs 25:28 gives an answer to some of this, too, and it's important to understand this because it says, whoever has no rule over his own spirit is like what? A city broken down and without walls. This is an important concept to start to understand because that means that a person who has no control over those pulls, the lust that's coming after you, if you start to give into that lust in your mind, in your heart, nobody sees me, there's no consequence. I'm kind of just giving into it in my mind and I have this going on. Then what that's saying that if you have no rule over that spirit, you're like a city broken down. You're defenseless. You're defenseless when it comes to this way of life reaching out and wanting to grab you and pull you in. You can be manipulated at will. Satan will throw something at you and he'll just kind of make you go whichever direction he wants. If you do not have control to resist and put away and not give in to these different pressures and these pulls that are there. Now you can see this with people, as I started to say earlier, who have different addictions. Like I said, somebody who has a sexual or pornographic addiction can't have a girl walk by and not lose track of what they're doing. I've seen people with addictions that I know at work who had millions of dollars and have $0. They went from there to there, and they don't even get it. They don't realize that those two could possibly be related. I've seen this take more people down because they are defenseless and manipulated at will because of these weaknesses. So this is an important proverb. Start to think about this and put this into your mind that to have rule over your own spirit, to resist these things. And you'll notice in that Proverbs previously, it started in the mind. You can't have it going on in your thoughts and then just not do it physically, because like it said, that person started to think about those ways. Now, let's just read a couple more scriptures here. Towards the end, let's turn to the New Testament, 2 Peter 2, verse 13. Because this way of life is also explained in the New Testament. And God says that, you know, even in the church, you may encounter these things in the church. There may be people who come in and kind of entice you or offer these things out to you. The reason they say that is to be aware of that. I think you encounter this in the world and you know and see that, but also understand that there are a lot of people that can present this to you. This says in 2 Peter 2, verse 13, says these people are spots and blemishes, carousing in their own deceptions. In other words, they're deceived themselves. They don't quite get it. They're deceived. While they feast with you, having eyes full of adultery, is that not one of the fruits that the way offers? Cannot cease from sin. They can't stop. They're stuck, enticing unstable souls. In fact, that kind of, the wording there means to bait. I'm baiting you. I'm trying to get you to stumble just like me. They have a heart trained in covetous practices about money, about appealing to that. Again, here's another clear indication of that fruit, and they're accursed children. Let's continue on. It says, for when they speak great swelling words of emptiness, they allure through the lusts of the flesh, through lewdness, the ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error. And while they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. For by whom a person is overcome, by him also he is brought into bondage. What does bondage mean? It means slavery. Like I said before, if you have no rule over your spirit, you're like a city with the walls broken down. Think about the war. No defenses. Come in, just take it completely over. Satan wants to do that. So, why is it a lie? This is a lie, an out-and-out lie, because the promise is one where they say, this is a way of liberty. I will give you freedom to express yourself, to be yourself, to do all these things, but the way it's done, and those concepts are not bad concepts. Let me just back that up, that, you know, it is good to express yourself correctly. It is good to have the true freedom. But what this is saying is it's offering a false way to those things. It's saying, I'm going to give you this freedom, but what it actually ends up being is bondage or slavery. It entraps people. Misery, depression, suicide, a lot of things happen around going this way of life, and they don't know why. They're stuck. That's the idea of being in bondage. They have no idea how to get out of it. It's trapped them so hard they cannot get out of it. That's why I say this way of life is what's called lipstick on a pig. It's a thin covering on a stinky pig is what it is. When you encounter a person like this, what is your response? You, sir, are offering lipstick on a pig. Let me hear you say that.
You, sir, are offering.
Very good. So when somebody comes to you presenting this, you can think that in your mind, and you can say that out loud if you feel like it. But it's important to recognize what you're being offered, one of those three things. So what's the answer here very quickly? The answer is in the other tree that God offers. God offers a way of life, and he offers things that are part of this way of life that are the answer to that. The world's going to say that's not the answer. It's the opposite. But God gives the answer. He gives a way upon repentance, saying, look, I am sorry for all the things that I've done. And there's a process that God introduces and offers with this way of life defined in his Bible. Through laying on of hands, he gives something that is his spirit he gives. This is the baptismal process. In a lot of ways, this is when you say, I'm committing my life to this way of life because I have seen the fruits of this other way, and I need help. I want to go this other way of life. Right? Before you're baptized, the Spirit is with you, and it does lead you. But there is a definite process that's outlined in the Bible where God says to receive the Spirit internally, there is a process called baptism and the laying on of hands where the Spirit comes to you. Why does this solve the problem? Like I said before, the person's heart strayed. What happens when this process is that God gives us a heart that wants to obey. This is the amazing thing. When you're baptized or when God's working with you before baptism, he starts to show you the fruits of going the other way of life, And he gives you a way and a heart that wants to choose the right way. That's the amazing thing. You start to see the suffering and the misery, and you want to go the other way. It's not compulsion and being dragged. It's a new heart saying you have a new mind to go that way. He takes care of putting away that past sin, but he also starts the process of removing you out of bondage. People get trapped in bondage, in addictions and things today, and God gives you the way to get out of those things. How? Because that sin is the problem. God gives you the power to put that sin away. The more you do that and rely on the Spirit, the more that addiction and that bondage loses its grip on you. The exact opposite of what this world presents out as the right way. So it gives us true freedom. It sounds the opposite of what the world says, and it is, and it gives you true freedom. So whether you're baptized or not, choosing this way of life or to eat of this tree, you will reap the benefits of this way of life. What's the result of this way? Life. Not death. Life. Is that just someday? Important question to answer in your mind. Is that someday? You know what? It's now and forever. When I choose this way of life, do I have to give up the good life now? That is an important question to answer. Because if it's just misery today, it's going to be hard to do. Let me answer that for you. God gives us one scripture in closing, 2 Timothy 1:7. Something to remember. This spirit that God gives us, it says he has not given us a spirit of fear. In other places it says, you know, of bondage or go back into bondage. But of what? Of power, of love, and a sound mind. What does that mean today? The world wants to offer up certain things, but only God has the real thing here. God has true strength, power. That's what it says here. Not phony control over other people. God has what a lot of people are seeking for, true connectedness with others and bonds with people that can't be broken, described as love. And God has true strength of mind with his spirit, a sound mind, not hang-ups, not addictions. So it's living life now, today, the good life today. So one thing to start to think about, start to contemplate, or as you might not be at that point, but start to think someday about baptism and talking to your minister at some point in time about that and to complete the process that you've already started on. So, when somebody comes up to you and starts to appeal with those three different ways and you hear this presented to you, what do you say?
Very good.